So, also welcome from my side. Thank you to the organizers, as well as to the journal Accounting Horizons for accepting our paper into this conference. And the paper is actually in co-authorship with two of my co-authors that are actually here, Jan Riepe, who is also at Paderborn, is at Paderborn University, Ulf Moormann, who is at NHH in Bergen, and our fourth co-author, Gopal, he actually couldn't join today because he's teaching. So my name is Alexander Liss. I'm an assistant professor at KU Leuven, and I'm also a research fellow of the Accounting for Transparency Network here from Germany. And the reason we got interested in this paper is actually can be briefly summarized within this graph. So we know that we are basically moving towards a knowledge-based economy, and we cannot ignore the fact that intangibles are a main component of firm value, so we have to see whether we need to recognize them also onto our balance sheets. And what we're seeing now is that both the ISB and also the FASB has pushed towards more recognition of intangible assets on balance sheets. So with the introduction of IFRS 3 here in, from the ISB and the SFAS 141 and 42 in the US, we've seen that intangible assets have been put on firms' balance sheet in billions. And you see basically within this graph that goodwill is something that dominates at least on the balance sheet side. Something that is at least less investigated from an academic research perspective is actually the line that is below, which has also been rising over time. In fact, when we look at purchase price allocations, intangible assets that are recognized aside of goodwill are also now one-third of the total deal value. So tangible assets, one-third, goodwill, one-third, intangible assets, one-third. That is, roughly speaking, the proportions that we're seeing now when we look at M&A accounting. Interestingly, and that's why I focused a lot of my research on, we don't have a lot of evidence on this particular graph due to data unavailability. And so we are seeing, at least in the data that we have been hand collecting, is that acquired intangible assets rise also with regard to different economic lifetimes. So we're seeing that when we differentiate between indefinite and finite intangibles, that there is a rise of intangible assets on firms' balance sheets. For finite intangibles, even much more. So the question now is, when we have these intangible assets on the balance sheet, what actually happens now to those in case there is a reduction in the value, so a potential impairment of them? So in this paper, we're actually asking three questions that, at least from our perspective, are not really investigated in academic research and could provide also importance for the practice. The first one is, are these intangible asset impairments actually happen in isolation or in conjunction also with other impairments, for example, with goodwill? Because this then speaks to the question, do we see it as a form of big bath accounting that is happening? So all firms impair a lot of intangibles regardless of whether it's goodwill or other acquired intangibles. Or is it something that also happens in isolation? The second thing that we are taking then is, do we see what kind of motives drive the impairment of intangible assets? And here particularly we look at business characteristics and reporting quality. So is that something that managers are playing around with, or is the economics of the firm changing that requires then to do an impairment of these intangibles? And the third question we are basically after is, we want to see whether the internal and external governance mechanisms could potentially moderate the relation between reporting quality as well as to impairments. So can we actually say something of whether there is an agency conflict, and when we increase governance, we can make potentially impairments more timelier so that to see that. How do we do this? Well, we have hand-collected a data set of intangible assets aside from goodwill. So this hand-collected data set allows us to put intangible assets into buckets of whether they are finite or indefinite. So in other words, if they are amortized or being not, or with regard to an annual impairment test. And here, at least for our investigation, we focus, and that's why I highlighted this here, we focus on firms or firm observations that have both intangible assets and goodwill on their balance sheet. So there we can really study with whether there are different incentive schemes of managers to potentially exploit different accountings for intangible assets versus versus goodwill. Okay, why do we do this? Well, the FASB and the IASB still discuss that for years. Tom already mentioned that also from within his paper. I just want to say, like, contribute here. This is something that at least standard setters seeking feedback on of what is an appropriate accounting for intangible assets. The thing that we are contributing here from research perspective is we provide this very unique data set. At least from accounting or from researcher perspective, we don't have a lot of data on acquired intangible assets. We know these assets, the acquired intangible amounts from CompuStat, but we don't know actually what is actually in them. So we don't know what kind of intangible assets firm have on their balance sheets. So we contribute that here, as well as this unique data feature to really study what amounts are on firm's balance sheets, and also what is their impairments happening for these particular firms. Okay, briefly on the accounting and why we are interested in doing this. We do see differences with regards to intangibles and how the accounting has been done. And generally speaking, we have the so-called impairment approach versus the impairment and amortization approach. Impairment approach, these are all the intangibles that have indefinite lifetime value. So for example, an FCC license or a indefinite trademark is usually something that has, we cannot put an economic lifetime on it. Whenever we can put an economic lifetime on a certain asset, like for example for a patent, these are then recognized as finite lifetime intangibles, which then are limited towards the economic lifetime. What are the certain differences when we see it as the accounting for intangible assets is these acquired intangibles need to be put on the balance sheet. And when they are put on the balance sheet, at least from an impairments perspective, we do have different group accounting there. So when we start with the indefinite intangibles, usually their impairment test is done on an asset-specific level. So for example, you have a trademark, you really test there out whether this particular trademark as the recoverable amount, is that still there or is it not? Does it need to be impaired or not? For a finite intangible asset, this is not done on the asset level, that is actually done on the asset group level. So we have a bunch then of assets together, usually coming from a previous M&A deal or subdivision, that then need to be tested on a group of assets itself. The goodwill then, this is the last step, is usually then tested on the reporting unit level. In IFRS, we call it the cash generating unit. So what you're seeing already here is like such kind of cascade happening whenever we do impairment tests. We do a sequence of impairment tests, starting off with first the assets, then the asset groups, then in the end, the reporting unit. And that creates different kinds of incentives, usually. Which is the first asset that is being impaired? Which one is the last one? Do we want to maybe not go towards reporting a goodwill impairment? Maybe let's impair most of the stuff in our intangibles. So is there a particular incentive that we could see? All right, with regard to the data, as I said, we have a very unique hand-collected database that comes actually what I did in my PhD. And we collected here the net amounts as well as the impairment amounts of intangible assets from the SEC EDGAR files of in the US. How we have done this, we have taken a large sample here from 2002 and 2020. Really important here, we do only look at firms that have intangibles and goodwill on their balance sheet. So we're kicking all those firms out that don't have anything, that is uninteresting for us. And we're also kicking out firms that potentially only have goodwill on the balance sheet, vice versa, that only have intangible assets on the balance sheet. The idea here is we want to study when they have both so that they can play around with and if there is some discretion going on there. Where's this data coming from? So I brought you here this one snapshot here from Amazon. I basically went through all the financial statements and hand collected out these particular net amounts here. So I put all these intangibles into buckets of finite and indefinite intangibles, as well as into the different classes to study intangibles in different kinds of settings. For this paper here, we have even taken a step further and have looked into the notes sections and collected there the intangible asset impairments, actually. So I highlighted you here this from Chico's Fas, a retailer in the US, and they had particularly a impairment of indefinite trade name here, as well as a finite impairment for their customer relationship. And this amount actually allows us then to study whether impairments appear first in isolation or in conjunction also in goodwill. So first of all, as a descriptive analysis we have done of whether we see intangible asset impairments in isolation or not. So what the first thing is, what I can, and that's why I highlighted this in this red box, is you see that at least indefinite intangibles are frequently impaired within our sample. Roughly speaking, in 18% of firm year observations that have both goodwill and indefinite intangibles on the balance sheet, indefinite intangibles is frequently impaired, almost as likely as the goodwill. If we take it one step further and then compare it of whether these indefinite impairments appear in isolation or also with goodwill, we see some variation actually. We see that some of these indefinite impairments are also impaired when there is a goodwill impairment. So this 835 represents cases where goodwill and indefinite is impaired. But we also have cases where there is only an indefinite impairment but no goodwill impairment. So there we already see some evidence that there is some combinations, but also isolating effects there, that intangibles are also being impaired without a goodwill impairment. Same for finite intangibles. So we have cases when there is an indefinite intangible being impaired, but there's no finite impairment, but also cases where there is a finite impairment also apparent. We have taken the same things also now to the finite intangibles. Here we have to say finite impairments do not appear that frequently. Is that It's very surprising, not really, because they're amortized over their respective economic lifetime. So if there is an impairment of finite intangibles, usually then it's something that triggers that. And that's also what we're seeing here. In about 9% or 8% of the cases, there is a finite intangible asset impairment. If we study it in combination of whether there's also a goodwill impairment, there's also some variation. So all in all, total, we see impairments happening both in isolation as well as in combination. Question now is, what drives these different impairment structures? What drives whether there is an impairment or not? And are there particular differences then also when you look at goodwill impairments versus intangible asset impairments? So in our first analysis, we focus there very simply on an association test, trying to figure out what determines impairments in general. And here we make two different buckets. We distinguish between reporting quality. So is the accounting discretion that managers are being using? And the second one is business characteristics. And here we focus on short-term business characteristics, one that are actually sure. So if, for example, return on asset goes bad, do we also see then that there is likely an impairment, as well as long-term perspective business characteristics, which we represent by stock returns. How do we run this? We actually run this within a predictive model. So we're basically saying, okay, what predicts 1 year ahead impairments of intangible assets? And as I said, we distinguish between reporting quality and business characteristics. We are actually focusing a lot, or we use a lot of these measures that we have seen in previous papers. So for reporting quality, we particularly focus here on five measures: the Amiram financial statement measure, if there is an internal control weakness, is there a modified audit opinion, as well as some indication of whether there's big bath accounting or smoothed earnings. On the business characteristics side, we try to control as much as possible for indices that represent the economics of the firm. So from classic market to book ratios to stock return, as well as sales growth, we try to include as much as possible as we could to capture that. Let's look at the results. So as a first thing, what we're doing is we are seeing that once there is an impairment, actually, at least for our indefinites and for goodwill, all our indicators of reporting quality seems to load quite drastically. What does that mean? So the more, if you are impairing indefinite and goodwill, there seems to be some discretion being involved. With regard to the finite intangibles, we also at least see some weak evidence with the Amiram measure as well as for earnings bath accounting, but the evidence is not that conclusive. So what we conclude from that is that at least when there is an impairment approach apparent with is in indefinite as well as in goodwill, managers try to play around with and try to avoid potentially impairments happening there. Let's see then what are the business characteristics. In order to shorten up the presentation a little bit, we focus here on these three factors. What is quite apparent is that the impairments, at least for business characteristics, also seem to load, but we see more evidence actually for the finite intangible assets. What does that particularly mean? It seems to mean that at least when the business characteristics or business conditions are deteriorating, finite intangible asset impairments become more of a thing. Does that make sense? Yes, obviously it does. If the market collapses or this triggers then usually an impairment test for these finite intangibles. Having said that, The next thing that we are basically you, and therefore we are grateful to our reviewers, they actually asked us, okay, what drives these differences between these indefinite and goodwill impairments versus finite impairments? And there, we actually built here on the agency framework to really see whether managers, when there is bad governance, we see more impairments versus if there's good governance, these managers are being actually held accountable and therefore we see more, better and timelier impairments. And what we are doing here is we're following with here actually a recent RAS paper, and we are particularly measuring there whether there is an impairment pressure going on. Impairment pressure we measure through the book-to-market ratio. So the more the higher the book-to-market ratio is, the more likely it is there could be an impairment. And we interact that with governance variables. The nice thing about this test is it alleviates some of the concerns that you might have that impairments could be driven by incentive structure of managers, as well as it allows us to study a mechanism why these impairments are actually being happening. So the feature, in order to, in shortness of the time, what we actually been finding is, at least if there is an impairment approach going on, so whenever there are indefinite and goodwill impairments, we see that then our interaction term, and that's our most one that we are interested in, turns really on. So if there is a high governance structures, at least internal ones, we see that if boards are being managed really, really well and there is an impairment pressure, an impairment actually has been happening for indefinite intangibles. We see the same scheme also for goodwill impairments. With regard to finite impairments, actually with internal corporate governance, we find a less inconclusive picture. So whenever there is a finite intangible asset impairment only for variable compensation, there seems to be an effect. But bottom line, we cannot really say that governance really moderates this relation. This is with regard to internal governance. But there are also external governance mechanisms. For example, there's industry auditor specialism, whether there is an institutional investor apparent. These are all things that could drive this relation. What we're finding actually there is we don't find any effects for anything. So regardless of whether finite, indefinite, or goodwill, external monitoring doesn't seem to matter. All right. Given that the academic contribution, hopefully you can read this up in our paper, given that we are at a conference here for regulators, what is the regulatory contribution? So what we're contributing here is we actually try to provide to the boards with evidence of whether impairments appear in combination or in isolation and what are the different mechanisms there. So whenever the boards are currently debating of whether the impairment-only approach versus the impairment plus amortization approach is the right one to do, we are actually showing that there are incentive schemes present. So it may not just be that the impairment approach is the wrong one, but managerial mechanisms also seem to play a role whenever we make these standard setting decisions. So right on time, hopefully. Thanks for your attention, and I'm really looking forward to the discussion.